Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true. It's true. That's the way it works. Whether you like it or not, that's the way it works. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing, you know, the craft of writing, the business of writing, but also the writing life, just what it takes to be a writer. I do one 3 times a week. It's called the Editor's Blog. They're little essays about the intersection of everyday life, creativity, spirituality. It's all there, but I also have video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres, all types of people. Right now, my conversation with Jennifer Longo, up-and-coming YA writer, lovely writer, great interview about her book, What I Carry, and just her interesting transition from being an actress to a playwright now to a novelist. Fascinating woman, great conversation. Check it all out at authormagazine.org. And we're funded, as always, by the fabulous people over at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association. They have been supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. Yes, they have. And I love being a part of that group. We teach class. Hey, if you're in this Seattle area, I'm going to be teaching a class there at their little headquarters in Issaquah. If you're not from around here, you won't know what Issaquah is. But if you're around here, you might know. Anyway, if you're in the Seattle area, Fearless Writing, a one-day workshop I'll be doing in April. Yeah, I don't know if it's up there yet, but I'm going to be doing it live. You can take it with me, Fearless Writing. They offer other things too, you know, if you can't be in the Seattle area, but you still want to gain benefits from being a part of the PNWA, well, you can listen in to live monthly meetings. Yes, you can. That's what they do. So check it out. Check it out. You can also register for their upcoming conference in September. Yes, you can. That's already begun. Learn all about it at pnwa.org. All right. For me, I think I mentioned last week, I'm going to mention it again. Maybe you don't live in the Seattle area, but maybe you'd love to take a Fearless Writing class with me. Well, fear not. I'm doing them online, but I mean live online. All you need is like an iPhone or an iPad or any kind of computer with a built-in webcam, and you can join in to this live video Fearless Writing workshop. That's going to be the 29th of February, and then the next week I'm doing Fearless Marketing, learning how to apply your inherent creativity to that marketing side, the thing most authors do not like to do. Fearless Writing, Fearless Marketing. Teaching them both. You don't have to be in Seattle. I got people from down in California. I got people out in New Zealand. All kinds of people are taking the class. You don't have to be in Seattle. Check it out if you're interested. It's very reasonably priced, and you can learn about it on my website, williamknauer.com. It's right there on the homepage. Okay, that's out of the way. So a few weeks ago, I tried to have today's guests on, and it just didn't work out. Technical problems. Well, we figured them out, and John Michael Cummings is back. John is the author of the nationally acclaimed coming-of-age novel, The Night I Freed John Brown, which was the winner of the Patterson Prize and recommended by USA Today for Black History Month. In his 2011 short story collection, Ugly to Start With, was an Indie Fab Award finalist, hailed by the Philadelphia Inquirer for its sharp observations, surpassing grace. His last novel, Don't Forget Me, Bro, was excerpted in the Chicago Tribune. Over the last 20 years, John's short stories and essays have appeared in more than 75 literary journals, including the Iowa Review, North American Review, the Chattahoochee Review, Alaska Quarterly Review, and the Kenyon Review. But he's here with us now. John, how you doing?
I am just fine, Bill. Wow, what an introduction. I can feel the golden crown shifting around on my head here.
Yeah. Well, sure. Well, you did all that. You did all that. Wait, let me ask you something. When you were a young fella, just a young pup, growing up in Harper's Ferry. When did it dawn on you that, like, actually, let's not even get to writing. Just like, I like stories. I like
it. It never did, Bill. No. You know, I was the last person who should have ever succeeded or be having an attempt at success, and the last person probably to ever become a writer. I was a flat out failure in high school. I graduated at the bottom of my class. It's not a nice, polite, you know, bellatristic, cushy story. I was I barely made it through high school. I had a really rough father, and no one in my family went to college. No one was literate,
right.
Billy. They were just working class, and so I barely made it through high school. As I say, at the bottom of my class, I had several misdemeanor arrests before
so you
I ever attempted.
Well, you
they
know,
were not, you know, misdemeanor. I mean, by the way, that protects it. You know that they weren't too serious.
Right.
And so I really don't believe I had a chance. You know, a snowflake's chance in well, you know where, in getting getting forward. So, you know, I finally made my way out of West Virginia to Virginia, to Fairfax, Virginia, where I went to George Mason University, and I found a savior, Mark Craver, who's deceased, unfortunately, is a poetry teacher, Mark Craver, C-R-A-V-E-R.
Yeah.
He said, "You are an interesting person. You have a lot to say. You have felt a lot of pain. You are going to write. I'm not sure what you're going to write, but you are going to write." And he was a really fabulous fella. He invited us, his students, over to his house where we all, you know, he had boxes and boxes of Hostess Twinkies, and we all got sugar high and talked about writing. And
no espresso or English breakfast tea, no Twinkies. I like it.
there was no tuna fish and spinach.
No. Okay, good. He was pleasing, a crowd pleaser, the Twinkie. Even to aspiring writers. Okay, so he'd go over his house, and he was a – sounds like he was a good teacher.
He was a fabulous teacher, yes. He was – unfortunately, he was obese, and he deceased – he died well before his years. He was only 45, and, you know, I shouldn't mention Twinkies and then obesity in the same sentence, but – I'm not sure the exact cause of death was not clear, but he died in his sleep. But, you know, this was a few years after I graduated from George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. And I had begged my way into the college, you know, and I was actually fairly good as an art student in high school. And I had a very good portfolio of portraits and landscapes, both in oil, acrylic, and pencil, charcoal, pastel, and I showed all of them to the registrar at George Mason University. Now, that's in Fairfax.
Yeah.
It has gained a lot more stature, more acclaim in the years since then.
And
she said,
changed,
you know, she said, you know, your transcripts are terrible from high school, but I think the college can benefit from having an artist of this caliber in
you know,
our program.
You know, funny, that would not happen now, I do not think. I think that
it
nature.
Would not. Nope.
My son went to college recently, or graduated recently, and I was astounded at the what they were charging, and just how difficult it was to get into certain schools. That when I was a young fellow, it was just like, yeah, anyone can go to the Boston University. Now it's like, it's very. I don't know what. There's just a lot more people going to college, I think, is all I can guess. But all right, so you know what's interesting though? That was a tough start. I should say,
it was a tough start, Bill. It really was.
Yeah, you wrote about it, and you sent me a piece that was really beautifully done, and you wrote about your childhood, and but you know, hard childhoods. Now, mine wasn't brutally hard; it had its challenges, but hard childhoods can make for some awfully good writing. They can make for drug addiction and criminality, but they can also make for good writing if taken in the right direction, you know?
I love how you say that, drug addiction and criminality.
You know,
it's true. What is, someone said to me the prerequisite of a writer is a terrible childhood or something to that effect.
Yeah, mine wasn't terrible, but it did. In fact, you know what's funny? I had a friend who wanted to write, And we were having a drink, and we had taken like a writing class together. And he's like, you know, this is my problem. I really love my parents. My father's a lawyer. He gave us a really good house. Like, my childhood was just fine. I don't think I have anything to say. I think I'm screwed.
He was wishing that he was a sufferer.
Yeah, that's right.
So he wished that he had suffered. And right.
So, all right. But well, so you discovered poetry. So you discovered poetry, which is a great to all kinds of writing, I think, whether you're going to write poetry or essays or fiction, whatever. I think poetry, that's really where I began to really learn to write, I think.
Yes. It's the highest. It is a truly majestic, beautiful form at its ultimate. Poetry is just an absolute, the best place to start. You know, it has rhythm.
No wiggle room.
It has cadence.
No fat. You can't.
Right.
You can't just go on and on. You got to get to it.
Right. Yeah. Right. It can be either rhyme or it can be free verse.
But it is
real and raw, and it teaches you. It teaches the writer, you know, to use, you know, the earthworms of words. It teaches you to use that kind of nitrogen-rich earth of language, which you can find,
right.
You know, but you have to seek it down your bones. As,
yes, you do.
The writer, was she Natalie Goldberg, who said, writing down the bones,
I think
it was one
was
of her
books.
Yeah.
I got
and
to
it truly is
you
that.
Know, see, she was on this show too, Sean, you see, so you're in
really?
Company.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, she was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think she's really implying the marrow of bones and what's inside.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bruce Springsteen was a big influence. And we know how tremendous and terrific and powerful and prolific of a writer he is,
songwriter, how
he reaches into that, into the center of the bone and manages to very successfully achieve it, whether it's by himself with a guitar or with his band that is often the size of a symphony, you know.
How is it getting big these days?
Yeah, he has, I mean, sometimes if you look, he has a couple of violinists
and a whole choir
behind him.
Why not? Let's go back. So you're in Virginia, and what was the name again of the teacher you loved?
Mark Craver.
C-R-A-V-E-R.
So Mark
Craver.
I believe he died. Yeah, Craver. He was a poetry teacher, a lecturer at George Mason University.
Okay, so you're taking this class from him.
Let me just ask you.
So you were taking this class from him, and you're a guy who's been struggling. You haven't been happy. You're feeling like a failure.
Right.
And then
this
man, a sort of a pseudo father figure, comes to and says something fantastic. What he says. You have something to say. So this is a beautiful thing to hear. It's moving, but this is the deal. You can lead the horse to water. At some point, you had to decide for yourself that you actually like to do this. You had to decide for yourself, I can do it. Do you remember when you began to recognize within yourself that the medium language was as fascinating to you as drawing or speaking or music or whatever?
Yes, I remember it in his eyes when he looked at me and said that. And we may have been
testing
back.
Oh, you recognized it yourself.
I saw the conviction in his eyes, and we may have been passing a Twinkie back and forth. You know? I can't remember. He drove an old crappy truck it didn't have a gas pedal. It just had a rod at the floor. And he drove it with barefooted. And you know, he was kind of a lovable lunatic, you know, and he wrote wonderful poetry, but I remember it in his eyes. He said, "You will write." And it was very contagious, and it set me forth. And so I managed to get through George Mason. But at that time, I actually had an art degree. It was studio arts and graphic design. So this was the last semester that I had taken his class.
Wow.
It was only as an elective.
Right.
Right.
Oh, man.
No. I was already had years of work in graphic arts and studio arts. I had made tombstones or gravestones, which is a more up-to-date word. And I had done
tombstones better.
Tombstone Hill, right?
Yeah.
And I had done silk screening at in Florida for a contractor for Disney. So my path was art, but I was so discouraged in Northern Virginia by the commercialized aspect, which was where I was living while going to George Mason. And I had so much pain in me, pain with a difficult relationship with my father, that in my poetry, Mark would say to me, "You've got to get this out. You're going to write." And then he said, "You know, just those words, you are going to write." It was like an order. It was almost like he was sending me forth in life.
Yeah.
And so I did. And
that's great.
Yeah, it was pretty remarkable. And then I went to, you know, I had a girlfriend at George Mason, and she had gone to Rhode Island where her parents lived.
Yeah, that's where I grew up.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
You're
Where'd she go in Rhode Island?
Well, she was born, her parents were in Smith Hill, if I've got it right.
Yeah. Smithfield,
Rhode Island. Very much working class, not exactly.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Right, not Brown University.
No, that's, I grew up in the shadows of Brown University, as a matter of fact.
Right. Not RISD or Brown University.
Out there in the sticks.
Right. Where everybody owns a pizza parlor and could be connected with the mafia.
Possibly, yeah. Always the possibility.
Possibly. So we moved to Newport. We were first settled in Providence, and then we moved to Newport. And I had a real stalking phenomenon of John Updike, you know, our great man of style, our great man of letters. And I loved his writing. I loved it because of the syntactical eloquence of it. It was really something how he had a really vivid, dripping kind of portrayal of his scenes, and he just had such a command of the sentences. And I almost, I actually did feel like a stalker. I went to his hometown. Well, I don't know if it was his hometown, but it was where he lived, in Ipswich, Massachusetts. And I went with my girlfriend at the time.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I'm sorry, my wife. And we pulled into town, and she said, "There he is. There he is." And I said, No. I said, "No." And then I looked at him, and I saw that kind of hawkish profile, and I said, "That is him.
Wow.
You know, that is him. He's jogging." And I knew I knew that that was his way of easing the day, was jogging. Now, even though he died of lung cancer, I ran up to him, and I had a manuscript in my hand.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, he said, "Oh, no, I'm not Mr. Updike." But, you know, one look at his profile, he has a very, very distinct face. And he knew that I knew he was lying.
Right.
And he said, "I'm not Mr. Updike." But what did I expect him to do? Take the manuscript
and jog on with it
happily?
Were you like 25 or something?
Well, yeah, I'd say toward 30. Yeah, toward 30.
Wow.
And my wife at the time said, "You know, Mr. Updike, I love your rabbit series."
Yeah.
And though she hated it, she really didn't like it at all. She
I mean, it was one of the Pulitzer Prize, for Christ's sake.
She despised his writing. She thought it was, really didn't like it at all.
Okay,
and,
but
even though she was ingratiating for my benefit. And so he ran on. He got away. And then a lady said, you know, a lady came out of the shop. It was a secondhand clothing store. She had watched the whole thing. And he had a question mark on the back of his shirt. It was upside down. It was a curious thing. And she said, "I know where he lives." And I thought, And she gave me very specific directions. She said, "You've got to cross the railroad tracks, take the first left, and you will see signs." And I wondered, what did she mean by signs? But then I realized, as I drove through this very serpentine road, you know, Updike had always wanted to be, had been a cartoonist. And on the trees, there were all these oddball signs like, "Whoa, you know, slow down." And then on the next curve, it would be, "Wow, watch it." and it'd be a little funny face, and the next one would be, slow down, geez, you know. And so I followed it all the way around, and then I went up to his great house, and, you know, this was within an hour of having encountered him in Ipswich, Massachusetts, right on the main street. You know, just having driven in kind of blindly, and my wife saying, ex-wife saying, there he is. And so I left it, and then no reply. So I came back. I returned, Bill. I was really kind of PO'd. I came back about 3 weeks later, and I left it again.
Oh,
and
my God.
Time,
I'm sorry.
I know. I came back
ass,
at 3 a.m.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, whatever. You didn't know any better. Okay.
I came back, and I ended up there at 3 a.m. in the morning. I was just peed off. You know, I said, how dare you ignore me? And so I left the same manuscript with a hefty over-postaged SASE. And I said, there's no way he can excuse himself from not responding. You know, I put $3 on this envelope. You know, he's got to respond. He wrote back. He said, you know, there are nice touches in these stories. You know, try to create, how did he phrase it, more interest in about whose resolution we are curious. So he had to use that King's English. You know, he had to use that Updikean phraseology.
So he actually wrote
back
to you. That was incredibly
generous. He did,
generous.
He said, well, God, I was, you know, having driven up there, this was not a short drive. I mean, you know, New England has a real. And he wrote back, he ended it, he said, keep writing, but don't keep sending them to me.
Well, that's fair. All right, so now.
He said, you need an editor. I'm a dead end. And I was just ticked off all the more after that.
What?
So,
oh, my God. You were so nice of him to give you that. All right, but so now, okay. So eventually, sir, let me ask you this. If now you've published a lot of stories, a couple books, working on the book.
Right.
If somebody started showing up at your door with a manuscript in their hand, what would you do? What would you do? Would you take it and read it? Would you take, get the hell off of my porch?
I would let loose my Rottweilers.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what I would do. I think I would just hope it go away because I'd probably be struggling to get something done. It would depend. You know, it always depends on the potential of the writer, I think. If they really are bad, well, I shouldn't say bad, but without the apt potential to be a strong literary writer, if they are in that category, then I might not respond. But in his case, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Of course, I showed up at 3 a.m., and I was terrified.
Pretty,
you know.
That's a... It was, 3 a.m. is like getting close to calling the police time of day.
But,
you know, it was meant to be. So let me ask you, so now you've written a bunch of stuff, obviously, still doing it. For you, when you think about writing.
It gets even crazier. Go ahead.
How so? What's that?
Well, I moved to – I was in Minneapolis. My wife and I, you know, we had problems and we split up. And I moved to Minneapolis, and because I had a friend there, and I wrote a little bit of work for the Utney Reader, which is an alternative news magazine.
Yeah.
So I think it ceased publication. And I also wrote for a Business Monthly magazine out there while I was working on my fiction. And I finally said, you know, I've had enough of this. I'm going to New York City. And I got on a Peter Pan bus. Peter Pan was the cheapest service I could find. And I ended up in New York City on President's Day, and this would be 2000. And it was the worst, bitter day. And I ended up in a youth hostel down on Lower Manhattan. And I was living – well, I was not living. You don't call a youth hostel living.
You just
call it dwelling.
Yeah.
And everybody – it was the funniest thing. Everyone held their shoes under their arms because they were so mistrustful of the other person because they were afraid of them stealing it. So it was President's Day, and I'm hiking around the avenues – with a 70-pound duffel bag on my shoulder, and I'm not a very big fella, but it didn't occur to me that I could have put it in a locker somewhere. I'm dragging it around. I'm gaunt, you know, because I'm not eating. I'm gaunt because I'm just not taking the time to eat. And
right.
It is brutally freezing. You know, New York City between the two rivers is colder to me than Minneapolis in the dry cold. So it's
right.
That damp cold that
just
was killing
brutal.
Me.
Brutal. Yeah.
So I ended up at 666 Broadway. And I bet you know where that is.
I actually don't know where that is.
Well, that is the office of Harper's Magazine. This was President's Day. And I said, you know, I have sent a zillion manuscripts to this guy, Lewis Lapham. And here I am. And so I went up, and lo and behold, the front doors were open. This is President's Day 2000. I guess that would be February. I'm not sure. Late February,
right.
I think.
Yeah.
Well, it's coming up. And there was light on in the back of the office, and I kept going back. And I'm not scruffy looking, but I am having –
you're not quite homeless guy, but you're like someone who might be homeless in a couple of weeks.
Right.
Okay.
I could be a lunatic. Right.
Right.
I do have that 70-pound green duffel bag, and it's hard to know what's inside
it. Suspicious.
Right.
Right.
So there he is. And I don't really know him by image. I don't know him by
face. Know the name.
I have been I know the name, and I have submitted a zillion short stories to him from Minneapolis. Oh my God, from everywhere I've lived, from Newport and from Fairfax, and I've gotten no reply except form replies, and a few times kind of. And there he is. He's in a. He is in a beautiful, beautiful blue, and I think it's a pinstripe suit. And he has what I think is a fake tan. I can't be sure, but it does not look – it looks sprayed on.
Gotcha.
God forgive me if I'm wrong.
Well,
and he's smoking a Parliament cigarette. That I was close enough to see. And he's at what I think is an IBM Selectric.
All right.
Typewriter.
Tapping away.
Not a computer. Not a computer. No, this is 2000. He didn't have to be.
Yep.
And I said, he looks up, and there I am. And I'm not a big guy. I'm only 5'7", or, you know, on my tiptoes. And he looks up, and I said, Mr. Lapham, it's John Michael Cummings from Minneapolis. And I said it as if he would be full of, he would rejoice and say,
right.
I've been waiting for you forever.
Right.
And he just he gives me a fairly blank look, and
sure.
Then he stands up and he said, well, our offices are closed today. He does, I think, at a moment recognize that I've been, I had been pounding him with submissions. I'm not sure, that he knows, that he recognizes that I've been one of those guys who won't go away. And so he said, we're closed today. He's quite strikingly tall. And as I say, he had a very, I kind of think of an unnatural tan and a beautiful suit. And I thought, this is fairly remarkable. He's on a holiday in a suit, obviously doing some work in the office. All of the other offices were dark, and the glass doors were wide open. And this is at 66 Broadway.
Right.
666 Broadway, and 666 is a terrible connotation.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I'll ever get over it.
Wow.
And he escorts me to the door, and he says, we're closed today. And I think he just is doing his best to get rid of me. So I just, I'm as polite and as I can be. And I try to be as non-threatening. And then I do send him a new story after I've settled in the city. And he said, I wish I had room for this. But I think my problem was that I was not writing short stories of the right length. Harper's, most of these big ones were taking 6,000-word short stories, not 2,000. And I was so geared for the 1,500 to 2,000-word short stories, which were a little short of what they wanted. But
John, my friend, You know what you are? You are a
storyteller,
my friend. You are a storyteller. That was one very interesting. You have wound your way to the very end of our show. From beginning, we've only gotten as far as the year 2000, but that's enough, apparently. And I have to say, I wish I had even a quarter of your stick your nose in it that you do. God knows where I'd have gotten in life if I had it, but I don't, unfortunately. So now I'm going to ask you.
You're great.
Before I turn
you're great, Bill.
Loose,
you're terrific.
I'm
really going to
ask
honored.
You one more question. One more.
Yes, sir.
Succinct question. Very simply, here's what I want you to do. I want you to finish this single sentence. If writing has taught you anything, it's taught you what?
Guts.
Guts.
It's taught
well,
me.
I think you had it to begin with, but it taught you to rely on them, that you need them, that you got them.
Yeah.
Guts.
Fight.
Guts.
Fight for
yeah.
what's important.
Yeah.
And never give up. And that's
yeah.
what I would say. And also, don't think about the past, but treat each day anew. That way,
yeah.
just fight each new day. And that way, you don't have to worry about the fatigue from previous days. You know, just forget about those. They're gone. Just take
Amen.
Each day and attack it. Yeah.
I love it.
You know, and that's,
I love it. John,
yeah.
keep writing those stories.
I will,
keep
sir.
Writing your book.
I will.
And thank you so much for coming on the show and for these fantastic stories.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure and honor. I'm so happy to be part of your program.
Well, it was great having you on, John. Thanks again.
Okay.
Thank you. Oh, what a story, people. God, you see? You just never know what's going to happen when you put yourself out there like John did. And it's good to have your guts. Be strong. And you know the key to guts? John actually, I think, quite tapped into it. Key to guts, the courage, we say, is being present. Fear, boys and girls, fear is a story you're telling yourself about the future. That's what fear is. And pain is a story about the past. But all your courage, all your potential, it's in the present. It's true. It's true. It's true it is. Okay. Thank you to my producer, RJ Jeffries. I'm going to be back again next week with the lovely Jess Safaris. Oh, she's a very cool person. I'm glad to have her on the show. First time author. It'll be a lot of fun. Until then, all you people, go find something you love to do and do it.